Look, I'm not going to give a whole drasha here. I think that was very, beautiful and sweet thing from a mishpacha. I think that what Shosh, that's her name, was saying was that, I mean, not religious, because probably she's seeing that everybody's making him back in her imagination. It means like a chassidish rebbe, and with the whole thing, and he doesn't mean that he wasn't shomer Torah mitzvahs. Because I spoke to Pinny Dunner about it, the one who originally wrote the article that the whole world was talking about, and he spent time talking to her as well, and he told me that he definitely was 100% shomer mitzvahs. He didn't want to be anymore like a chassidish rebbe, but in the end he was giving the shiurim, and he did have a new type of chassidim. I think that at the time Yom Kippur, it's right before Yom Kippur that I saw this whole thing and spoke about it. I think it was by Yisker, I think by Yisker, that I was so taken by it. Because really, it's the story of our lives. You know, that picture that I read, when there was more that came out afterwards about how when he came back to the dining room, he was sure that everybody was going to yell at him and spit at him and hate him, like she said. And then when he came, there were some old survivors that remembered, and they said to him, you know, they called him Rebbe. And in the States, he was called George Nickel, right? You remember? I'm sure you remember the story, and you read it. It was put into the back of the book here. George Nickel, he was a business guy. He was very, very successful. And then he lost everything. There was something went wrong with the projects that he was working on in the real estate. And then he went to college to study to get in psychology. He got a BA, and then he got a master's in psychology. He was 80 years old, and he had roommates that were 18, and they all loved him, and nobody knew who he was, like this strange, mysterious person without a wife, without children, without anything, just that he was brilliant, and that he had a funny accent, and they didn't know who was this guy. And so he expected to come back here, and because he saw himself as a complete failure. Because what he wanted to accomplish, he felt that he had failed at, because he disappointed the Hasidim. He couldn't get the money to pay back the original guys that gave the money in Poland to build the place. He tried. He went to America a couple of times. Back then, he went to try to raise money. He did everything he could to try to pull the place up from the swamps, that it was all mosquitoes and malaria and sickness. And then originally the people that the secular Zionists, that they were going to help, because it was like a very big deal when they came, that you had this Chassidish Rebbe, this pioneer that came to build the land. So like it was very popular in the beginning, but then when it came time to come up with the money, it didn't, you know, then he lost his popularity. And who did he have over here? Who were the chevra that came to build this place? There were a couple of yeshiva bachim and those old people. They didn't have it. They didn't know which side of the I don't know. I also don't know which side of the shovel. Okay, let's say shovel. They don't know which side of the shovel is on the right side. They don't even know bichlal. What are they doing? And they came here and they didn't know what they were doing. They were guys that they knew how to learn, and they knew how to daven, or they knew how a little bit to milk some of them a cow, but to develop a place, the place was not needed tremendous skill, and had to take care of it. They didn't know, and it all unraveled, and he felt that he had disappointed them, and he had disappointed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he ran away. He ran away for a long time. You remember that also we saw there was this thing that he was in Los Angeles. When he was in Los Angeles, a friend, he did not let people know who he was. Can you imagine like this? He was one of the biggest Hasidic rabbis in Poland before the war. It's hard for us to understand that. He had one of the richest Hasidus and one of the wealthiest Kehilas, and he was a big Talmud Chacham, and he was a Bar Hachi. And then he became like this. He just went into hiding. So when he was in Los Angeles, there was one Jew that knew who he was, and he stayed friends with him, and they kept together. So you remember that they went, so this one friend kept on pulling him to come. There was a shalshulis. There was a certain rabbi that was visiting in town. You remember? And he kept on, I don't remember which rabbi, it's not important, but it was a rabbi that was visiting Los Angeles, and this friend said, come. So the rabbi went, you know, put a yarmulke on his head, And he went to Tish, and he's sitting there by the Tish with his friend. And there was an old Jew that was sitting next to them and said, this is a Rebbe, this is a Tish. I remember when I went by the Heilige Yabloner, by the Holy Yabloner Rebbe. And he was sitting like two people, George Nickel, sitting two people away, you know, business investor with a hair slicked back and like a cool dude, you know, and by those standards. And this is a Rebbe. I remember the Yabloner Rebbe. Regardless of how religious he was at the end, he came back to Torah Mitzvahs at the end. But the story that what I found so unbelievably inspirational about it was that, you know, it's what I was talking about really last night and the whole time, that there's that part of ourselves that's real, that wants to do the right thing, and then you get sidetracked, you get lost, and you feel that. You let other people down in your life, and you feel that you let HaKadosh Baruch Hu down in your life, that nobody cares for you, nobody wants you. And when he came back, and there's a woman they still calling Rebbe, Rebbe, and she said, if not for you, we would have all been dead. We would have been killed in Poland. Can you imagine all those years he never thought of it like that? That's how a person is. It's so crazy. There's so many good things that we do. And there's so many positive changes that we make in helping our children and other people. But you never think of that. You always think of the bad stuff, you know. So here he saved so many people. He saved these families. And all the years he never thought of that. So all the years he couldn't face, he couldn't think of coming back to Eretz Yisrael. He couldn't think of putting on a pair of tefillin. He couldn't put on a pair of tefillin. He couldn't think of doing anything. He was completely paralyzed in that place of my whole life. My whole life is nothing. And I ruined everything. And I ruined everybody because of that. He couldn't put on a tefillin. He couldn't keep a Shabbos. He couldn't keep a mitzvah. And then the second, if somehow this, or her husband was this Ehud, the mishpacha, that was able to convince him to come visit Eretz Yisrael. And from what he told me, Donner, it was only a lot of his stylists to bring him back. He didn't want to come. It was a whole thing. Until finally he brought him back here. And he was so afraid to walk into this place. He was hoping it was only like young people. There'd be nothing than old people that remembered him. He was nervous and he came. And then he comes in. They say, Rabbi, but once he felt that, once he realized that he wasn't as big a rush as he thought, and once he realized that there were good things that I did in my life. Did you ever see there's a vidui from Rav Kook? Some of you have seen it. There's one of the ksavim from Rav Kook where he writes, of course we have to say vidui of the bad things we've done in our lives. So we say Ashanu Bagana Gazanu and so on. Achich Ratan Lefanecha v'chul v'chul. So there are plenty of things that we've done wrong. But Rav Kook wrote a nusach of a vidui in the order also of Aleph Beis of Ahavti. You know, the good things that I've done in my life. I daven for my children, for other Jews. I keep Shabbos. You have to say a vidui over the good things that we've done. And then somehow it opened up in him once again that realization of that which should have been so obvious, that his mom is saved. It's not just he saved a couple of people. Their children and grandchildren, he saved hundreds and hundreds of people. And now it keeps on going. He saved. And when he realized that it became clear to him, then he was able, in a second, to come back to Shabbos and to Tefillin. And the story is like, it's like a modern-day story of Ablazer ben Dardai, you know? Like the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, like that he was doing every Aveira in the world, not that Chalila, but that Ablazer ben Dardai was doing every Aveira in the world. And that at the end of his life, you know, it's an interesting thing. There was a cousin of ours. My father had a cousin. If you look in the shul, you'll see in a lot of the Sfarim, the oldest Sfarims, I'm sure, you know, it says a Kaufman. I don't know if you're in the old Sfarim. And on the wall, it says in the classroom, and there's a Sefer Torah that my father had a cousin, Beatrice. That was her English name that she took when she came here, Beatrice. And she came before the Milchama. When she was in Europe, she was married to a big tzaddik. from a famous dynasty that I don't want to say what. She said he was very, very kind and very good to her, but she wanted to go to the theater and he wanted to say Tikkun Chatzais. And this was like, it wasn't a shidduch. She wasn't really so, she was from, because she was from a very big family. The reason that he married her is because she was very wealthy. So there was a shidduch that was made, but she said, the truth is, I really wasn't so religious. And they made this shidduch for me, and he was very sweet and everything, but it wasn't fun. And they got divorced in Europe. So she came to America before the war, this Beatrice. And she didn't keep anything. She was eating treif, and she became very wealthy. She had a cosmetic, makeups and all these things with the movie stars. She used to make them up and give them, sell very expensive cosmetics. My mother used to go to get a lot of times the Hungarians like that, you know, the soft skin, you know what I mean? Soft skin, nice skin. So my mother used to go to Cousin B. And she used to come to us every now and then. And I had a kesher with her just, you know, as a kid. And this Cousin B lived to be around 92, 93 years old. And she at the end of her life, she started to light candles and to daven again. She kept nothing all of the years. And I attribute that to my parents, because my parents used to go and bring her kosher food, that she should eat kosher food, because otherwise she would order it from a treif restaurant, and to bring her something to eat. And then she started to light candles again at the age of 90, 89, she started to light candles and to keep things and to start davening again. She came from a very holy place, and she started to daven again. So I just find it inspirational, personally, that realization that it's never, ever, ever too late, that it's never too late to change. And that the second that our kids, and that we realize that we're not as bad as we think. Yeah, we make mistakes. But we're not bad. We just make mistakes. So the Rebbe made mistakes. And it wasn't even his fault. Who would have? Like you feel like screaming. Like, why were you? Why did you feel so bad? Lamaisi, you didn't take any money for yourself. He was a poor man, and he just wanted to come and bring the chassidim to Eretz Yisrael, to build Eretz Yisrael, and to give his chassidim to get away from Poland and the Cossacks, and he wanted to do a good thing. He blamed himself that he didn't realize he should have looked into it more, that the land wasn't good over here. But look now, we didn't see. I was here when I was 1967 once at the yeshiva, but I didn't see the kfar. I don't know what's going on over here. But it's a whole thriving yeshiv, and it all comes from him. It all comes from this person, until he realized that he wasn't as bad as he thought he was, he couldn't bring himself to change. He couldn't bring himself to come back. And at the end of his life, he came back. So, like Reb Elazar ben Dedaya, Eina Dava Torah Elo Bi, and he did come back. And at the end of his life, he did have these shiurim that he was giving, and he had chassidim again. And from what I was told is that Friday night, it was in his house, he was already close to 90, and late into the night, he was singing zmiras, and he was teaching the chevra over here, the new generation. He was teaching them the old songs that he remembered from when he was a child. So, what are we here for? We came. It's not the usual route that trips take. And that's why you see that she was very moved by it. I don't think that she. I don't know if she has groups like us coming here every day, like us, meaning from people that are coming to make a pilgrimage to her uncle. It became maybe a subject of curiosity, but I certainly, we're not here because of curiosity. We're here to say thank you. You know, you heard of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer? I mentioned to one of the Chevra earlier in the trip, somebody asked me, like, why are we going to the Ablana? It's a nice story, but like, you know, Krach seems like 40 minutes out of the way. The Tver, you know, we went a little bit off the road. It's not so big. It's like a half hour, 40 minutes. But why going to the Ablana? It's a nice story. So I said to him that you heard Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, right? The big Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. The biggest Rosh Hashiva in the world. He was very, very close to Rav Kook. He's the father-in-law. Who was his son-in-law, you remember? Rabbi Aaron was his son-in-law. Rabbi Zalman was the biggest Rosh Hashiva. He was the Zakan Rosh Hashiva. In Europe already, when he came to HSL, he was the biggest Rosh Hashiva. He's a tzaddik, Rabbi Zalman. So I saw in the Sefer that Rabbi Zalman was ready. It was just not so long before he died. And at that time, there was a new neighborhood that was being developed in Yerushalayim. Some of you might have heard of it. It's called Bayit Vagan. Right? It was a new neighborhood then, Bayit Vagan. It was already like Michutz, far away. And Rabbi Zalman had a student that was making a bar mitzvah. One of his talmidim was making a bar mitzvah. And the student, out of respect to the Rosh Hashiva, came to the Yeshiva. The Yeshiva lived in Gula, I believe. Maybe Shari Chesed at the end, but Gula or Shari Chesed, lived in Yerushalayim. And the student came with an invitation. He never, ever, ever expected that, or in any way would have had the chutzpah to expect the Yeshiva. It was on Shabbos. I'm not talking about to come to on Thursday night in the sands, you understand? This is on Shabbos. And Rabbi Zalman lived in the middle of Yerushalayim, in Beit Vagan, and he was already maybe 93, 94. So he never expected. And it was the summer. So, at the Bar Mitzvah on Shabbos morning, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer shows up at the Bar Mitzvah with the whole Levush. Rabbi Zalman shows up at the Bar Mitzvah. And the father of the boy comes, the Rabbi Zalman's student comes running over and he says, Rabbi, I'm mechila a million times. I never intended. I just wanted to be mechabed the Rosh Hashiva with an invitation. I never intended for the Rosh Hashiva to come. Schlep, you know, it was to walk, and he probably walked like this. It must have been 3-4 hours to walk to, from Gula to Beit Vagan in the heat with the Lavush. He wore a strimal on Shabbos. You know, he wore a strimal. And he came there, and the Rosh Hashiva said, I didn't come for you. I didn't come for you. It's a beautiful simcha, but I didn't come for you. What am I going to go walking on the sugar? I walk to Beit Vagan on the Shabbos afternoon. I didn't come for you. So, you're here. So he said, the reason I came is like this. When you gave me the invitation, I looked at you and I looked at the invitation and the Bar Mitzvah Bacher, and I thought, Rebbeinu Shlom, Ich bin schon ein alter Yid. How much time do I have left in the world? How much time do I have left in the world? If you're already making a Bar Mitzvah, you're already so old that you have, my students already has a kid who's making you a mitzvah. So then I thought, is this Zalman, what's going to be with you? You're an old man. When are you going to come back to Hashem? When are you going to do tshuva? I had this hear her tshuva, this feeling that I wanted to change, to start again, even though I'm an old man. And als hakaras ha'tayv, because I'm so grateful to you that you, even for an old man, you gave me like, you know, when the doctor gives, you know, they give the heart like a jump. Right? You gave my heart like a jump, like a young person to want to start again. That's why I walked to Beit Vagan, because I'm grateful to you. So I wanted to come here because I'm grateful to this tzaddik. I don't know whether at the end of his life he wore a gartler, he ate gebrochs or didn't eat gebrochs. Honestly, I don't care. I really don't care. What I care about is the courage of the person to do that, to come back. I care so much about the heartbreaking escape from Yiddishkeit, that he ran away because he felt he was no good, which is happening to so many of our kids and so many of our adults, even the ones that are still from. You look at them and look at them with davening. They're running away. Why are they running away? It's not because they don't believe in the Baruch Shalom. You think for a second he stopped being a Chazdisha Rebbe? He was all the years that he was George Nickel. Nagel, he called himself Nickel, George Nickel in Los Angeles, a businessman. Every single minute he was Rabbi Chezkel Taub, HaRebbe Mi'ablon, in exile. In exile. So, he was a tzaddik in exile. And that's exactly the whole story of our journey, of what this means. The tzaddik that I was talking about last night, Yesod, the meat of Yesod, the tzaddik who's in a state of exile. And when a Jew realizes that the Baruch Shalom all along sees me as a Rebbe, not the way that I look at myself, when it dawned upon him, when that woman called that, that's what struck me in that narrative that I read. I don't know if it was on Yom Kippur or later, when she just screamed out, Rebbe, and he's looking at himself, he's like, you know, me. She's Rebbe. And once she said that, Rebbe, and he looked at himself again as not being George Nickel, but as being Yechezkel Taub, the Nainikel from Tzaddikei Elyon, I don't know, going back to the Chayza and beyond, from all those Tzaddikim that he came from, and that he was a person that spent his whole life, the earlier part of his life, with Kedush and Tahara, a million mikvahs, a million tefillahs, a million blat gemara, and Chesvar Makadoshim, and Chesidim, and then all of a sudden, then he came back. Whatever Madrega, he came back, but he came back. So I think that we owe him, that to come back, to come here to say thank you. Because this story to me is more inspiring than all of the stories I read about the ones that never, ever had any detours, you know? There's a friend of mine that says, you know, we don't like any of these categories that they make. They have BT, Balt Shuva, and they have FFB, from Birth. These are disgusting titles and things, silly titles. But I have an old friend of mine that he said, Ich bin me, he says, Ich bin an FFBWL. I said, what's, I said, Yossi, what does that mean? He says, from birth with lapses. from birth with lapses. So I can relate to that. No, we could all right, we have a couple of BTs there also. We love you and everything is great. But BTs, BTWL. All right, but that takes time. That takes time. In the beginning, it's not like that in the beginning, but the right. BTWL, right. So it's the with lapses, and that most the natural thing is that when there's a lapse, you just, in order to make yourself feel like, okay, good, you don't come back, you can't come back. So the thought of him coming back after all of that, to me, that's like the strongest person in the world. It's the strongest person. That's why my cousin, my father's cousin Beatrice, I find it to be, it's such an inspiring person that at the age of 90, she starts to put on a kerchief onto her head again. She starts to light candles. And she wouldn't eat anything from the, because she had a lot of mishagasim. And she wouldn't eat anything except my mother had to bring her. My mother would go on the train to the city because she lived in Manhattan, the West Side. My mother would bring her a pot on the train. It's a schus of my mother. Because she wouldn't eat, because my mother says, there you have on the West Side, Upper West Side, you have kosher all over this, kosher restaurants and food. And my mother said, you can get, they'll bring it to you, Beatrice. You don't have to go. She says, no, I don't like their food. I won't eat their food. So she's not eating treif anymore, but she's not going to eat from any restaurant. So she's 90 years old. So my mother went on the train with a pot every week to bring her for Shabbos, to make food for her, and to bring her food, to bring her. And she wouldn't, at the end of the, now you know what the end of Beatrice's story is? Listen to this. She died. Before she died, she asked to speak to my father. And my father knew her, you know, they were kids. So she asked to speak to my father. And she has a son. The son was very bad with drugs and with music, all kinds of bad things, and went to South America. Raymond, my cousin Raymond. He married somebody. I don't remember if he married somebody. He married somebody that wasn't Jewish. I don't. I'm sorry. Okay. I have to talk to Shwecky a little bit about it. You know those guys, they put it in their mouths. Like, can't do it. Okay. So I'm not used to that. All right. I usually talk Shabbos, but I'm that night. So I had this cousin Raymond, who I remember also. He was very, like, he was from the early potheads, like when it was just starting, you know what I mean? So he went to South America with a girl. Oh, nice. Okay. Right. Okay, I don't have to give all the details. That's right. So that was Beatrice's kid. And in the end, she said to my father, this is how much money I have, and I want you to give it to yeshivas and to Beis Yankovs. And my father was put in charge of it. She didn't have anybody else in the world. And to my father's credit, she also wanted to give to my father. My father didn't take a penny. And that's how we got all the svarim in the shul. And that's how we got the Sefer Torah. The first Sefer Torah that Eish Kodesh had is from Cousin B. And has her name on it. You'll look at it, you'll see. The first Sefer Torah that we got from Moshe Lieberman back when the shul started. And he gave big checks to all these. And there was a Rebbe that was kind to me and to our family, that he learned with me a lot. And my father gave him a big check to take care of the whole Bais HaMedrash for all the years. From this cousin, be how she left the world. That's how she left the world. That's a story that I find very inspiring. You don't find that? I find that very inspiring. After everything that she went through, and she ran away from, she was married to a mishpacha and the whole thing, and she came back at the end. So I came here to say, Rebbe, I don't know how from you were at the end, I don't care. But we're coming here to say thank you. That you brought a hero tshuva for us for Yom Kippur. That's kedai to travel all the way from America to come and to say thank you, because you gave us on Yom Kippur a feeling that Hashem loves us and it's never too late to change. That feeling that it's never too late to change, that I could always come back, and that I thought that I was so bad, and it turns out that I'm not as bad as I thought, and I have to say vidui because there are good things in my life. That's the Torah from the Yablana Rebbe. I don't know any other Torahs from him. I didn't hear any Torahs from him, but that was the Torah that I was makabel from this tzaddik who was buried here. And I wanted to bring him nachas to see that he still has some chassidim in the world, not regular chassidim. It's not a regular chassidus, but there are chassidim. There are chassidim that haven't forgotten you. And I see that she's very moved by that. I didn't realize that, you know, that it's not happening all the time, but she said that it's not common. So that you're not forgotten. And we remember what you did, and we're inspired by what you did. And Hashem Yisboch should help each and every one of us, that we should know that he loves us, and that we can always, always change and always be better, and never, ever, ever to look back and forget all the good that we've done in our lives. To be grateful, and we're grateful for you giving us this opportunity to come here to say a capital tale.
Shire Hatshuva Hanolata 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 Liim Bashkake Modena Tziruva Shamanish Batha Chuba Hanolata Hanolatitaka Hanolatitaka Vim Bashaki Modena Tsirura Shamanish Matha Itzrohafani Mehera
sein. Das. I'm with talented people.